So hello everyone. So welcome to the weekly W3C Credentials Communities Group meeting. So we'll wait for other people to join, but before then we can go over the agendas as well as the Code of Ethics and IP note. So first of all, today's main agenda, we invited Matthew from the Three Box Labs to talk about ceramic.network. Actually, a few months ago, I remember the community was talking about ceramic, and actually one of the community members suggested the idea to invite someone from ceramic to talk about it. So today we're very fortunate to have Matthew taking the time to actually present about ceramic and what it does. Any other agendas that people want to bring up? All right, I'll quickly go over the IP notes. First of all, just a quick reminder about Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. More or less just be respectful and then making sure that we create a psychologically safe environment where people feel safe to actually voice their opinions. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So there are links to the emails I send out to the mailing list. So just click on that and to join and create a W3C account if you haven't done so. These minutes and audio recordings of everything said on this call are archived at the links in the email. Actually, recently we fixed the issue, so the issue actually all show up now. We're still trying to fix the transcriptions and things like that, so that please give us a little bit of time to get all those in place. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call, as well as to take minutes. Type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue with or Q- to remove it. Just be brief so that if we have a lot of questions, everyone has the chance to chime in. Now, any introductions or reintroductions? If you're new to the community or recently new, relatively new, and you want to reintroduce yourself, please unmute or put yourself in the queue. All right. We'll also do so at the end of the meeting as well. I know some people join, usually they would join like 5 minutes later and things like that. So that we'll do the introductions and reintroductions at the end of the meeting as well. Any announcements or reminders? Okay. And I'll also queue this up, announcements or reminders at the end and at the end of the meeting as well. Any comments on the action items on GitHub? All right. Well, today we have a relatively light agenda, I guess. So let's get to the main agenda. As mentioned, I think a few months ago, someone from the community suggested us to invite someone from Ceramic to talk about ceramic.network, what it does, how it intersects with self-sovereign identity work that we're doing in the community. And today we're very, very pleased and want to thank Matthew to actually give us a presentation on Ceramic. And I think you'll go over what ceramic is, right? And then, as well as why is it important? And we'll open up to the general Q&A at the end of his presentation. So without further ado, Matthew, please take the floor.
Awesome. Thank you. Would you guys prefer that I shared slides or do you want me to just talk? Cause I can do either way.
I think if you could share the slides, that would be great. Thanks.
Perfect. No problem. Okay. So, before I dive super deep into the slides, I just want to give you guys a little about me. I joined Three Box Labs to work on the Ceramic Network about 9 or 10 months ago. I come from traditional Web2 companies. Prior to ending up at Ceramic, I did a long stint at GitHub, building professional services for that team. So now I'm a developer advocate in this space. I've done a lot with data, over the years. I traveled around the world and did a bunch of like database consulting for a while. And that's kind of what led me into the Ceramic world of things, since Ceramic definitely aims to be composable data on like the Web3 mindset of building applications. So that's a little about me. Let's dive into what Ceramic is. Oh, also I'm the developer advocate on the team. So when we open up the Q&A session, there might be a couple questions that I don't have the answers to for sure. I mainly interface with developers and integrating this into their applications rather than like high level strategic view stuff. But any type of question that I can't answer for you here, I can get over to our leadership team and they'll be able to answer that and I can follow up with you guys. So don't hesitate to try to throw me to the wolves, but at the same time, you guys might get me on one or two, so you'll have to forgive me. So our team's been around for a while. Our core founders started at Consensus way back in 2016, really focused on building leading Web3 developer products. Most recently, we've shipped something around DIDs, so decentralized identifiers, called DID Session. We'll talk about it a little bit later. It's really awesome. I think it's like the number one product for our team to be proud about with how they're managing DIDs and sessions for apps, as well as like using those DIDs to control data and provide, you know, sovereign data to the owner of the DID and stuff. And we shipped ComposeDB, which expands our database layer to allow a lot more indexing, to make it more queryable and to conform a little better with traditional standards like GraphQL. So we've shipped a lot of things before that. We've worked hard on like chain agnostic capability objects. We've worked hard on React libraries like SelfID and a whole suite of developer tools along the way. Some of you might have actually stumbled upon Ceramic and not realized it. If you've ever used like 3ID Connect to get a decentralized identifier from, let's say, MetaMask, then you used Ceramic in some way, shape, or form. That used to be the flagship like product was this 3ID Connect, which would pop an iframe. The problem with that is it was very like user heavy. The user had to sign a lot of transactions to do very simple things. So it didn't like provide the best user experience. DID Session kind of solves that. So I think in order to understand the value prop of Ceramic, it's really important to walk through a very simple user journey. It's one that we can probably all resonate with. Every one of us has signed up to a social app, I'm sure, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, right? Name one, you signed up to it. Excuse me. During signup time, you probably entered some standardized information, like what your name is, what your birthday might be, where you're located, a username. And then once you're like logged in, maybe you set up site preferences, and then you had to go through this really long, painful process of finding the people that you like in life to follow or the people that motivate you, and you have to like follow them, or, and then if something goes wrong, you have to unfollow them. And this isn't a bad flow. This is just like using an app, but it gets really cumbersome when we go from one app to 10 apps or however many social apps exist. A lot of them ask for the same information upon sign up, right? Whether that's name, birthday, location, we kind of get the point. They all kind of had the same flow too. Once you're signed up and you're logged in, then you're still adding and following your friends and your connections and all the messaging and stuff exists. This is not only a problem because we're repeating a bunch of data. The bigger problem is that all of this data gets stored on that social app servers. So if you consider Facebook, which I think we can all agree Facebook has the most wonderful data practices of all time, all that sign up information and all that info about you gets stored on Facebook servers. And then when we sign up for Twitter, it all gets stored on Twitter servers. And when we sign up on LinkedIn, it all gets stored on LinkedIn servers. And these servers don't communicate with each other. And you no longer own that data about yourself. You lose agency. So you yourself, the owner of the data, has no agency over what happens to that data going forward. And this is kind of scary for developers too, because what if Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, what if they decide to shut down the API to that data? Right now, a lot of these social platforms, they allow open access to APIs so that developers can query the data and use it in other applications. But there's still like this really weird like layer of trust that we have to trust that we're getting the correct view back from Facebook and Twitter and whoever might have the agency over this data. So this is like the major hurdle that we try to solve. And it's not just one that we woke up to one day and said, hey, like let's fix a problem that's not real. We're seeing a lot of Web3 companies really demand that sovereignty over data exists for their user base. And that's really what we're aiming to tackle. So for us, Ceramic, what it really is a decentralized network for composable data. And it doesn't necessarily make your application Web3. However, it definitely contributes to the Web3 stack. It kind of comes in three very distinct components. And if we can wrap our heads around these three components, I think what Ceramic is becomes really clear. At the bottom layer, the bare minimum here, there's a Ceramic node. And this is just a small application that interfaces with IPFS. It's the underlying infrastructure. And this is not currently an incentivized layer. It will, however, one day be incentivized so that if you choose to just be a node operator, you can be a node operator. So a node is basically the small application that runs, it interfaces with IPFS, but it is what decentralizes all the data stored on the Ceramic network. The purpose of this is when we need to scale, we can just horizontally scale by adding another node. The main responsibility of a node is really providing the validity of the data. So when we request data from a server, that data is what it's supposed to be, that the state is current. There's blockchain proof that accompanies that data to some degree and says, hey, this data is correct. It also really keeps track of the stream history. When I say stream, I don't mean streaming data like we might find in Kafka or some other big data solution. Data streams on Ceramic are very much just like JSON objects of data. So you could think like a MongoDB document. For us, we call that a data stream. So these things go through changes. Consider if a user, they signed up to social app A and they said their name was Matt Davis. And then all of a sudden I decided to start going by Matthew and I wanted to change my name. I'm going to need to update that stream about who I am to say Matthew instead of Matt. So Ceramic will keep track of all of those changes to the data. And what happens is when we do a read, if it's an unknown read, we will rebuild the history of all the changes that have ever happened to that data stream from Genesis, including all the blockchain proofs to verify that what we are currently seeing, since it was previously unknown to us, is valid and accurate to the most current state. So the node handles all of this stuff for us, which is great because it would be a lot to have to handle on our own. So the second layer to that is called ComposeDB, and this is one of our newest products out the door. If you've used Ceramic in the past, this might have been called Ceramic. We've renamed it to ComposeDB and added a bunch of functionality to it. However, at this layer, this is an API that's always going to be open, and that's also what the Ceramic nodes help with, is maintaining the openness of this API, so that we at Ceramic could never take it away from developers. Like it's always going to be open and available. So ComposeDB allows developers to create and distribute like commonly accepted data schemas for these apps. So if we go back and we look at this problem of name, birthday, location, this might be something like a user profile. And this is a common schema that's used across apps. Or site preferences might be a specific schema shape, and same for friends and followers. So ComposeDB allows those developers to say, hey, I'm going to outline what a common basic profile looks like. Once I build that schema, I'm going to publish it to the network, and that allows every other developer in the world to query for that schema and say, hey, instead of rebuilding a user profile, let me just use what already exists. And what becomes really cool about this is the composability piece. If a user creates a basic profile using their decentralized identifier, their DID, then they can log into any app in the world. As long as that app understands how to read the basic profile from Ceramic, that profile follows the user. So they can fill it out in one location and reuse it across all apps. So this becomes really useful, like if you have a million followers and you want to take that list with you from app to app to app, you could just log in, and since that list is now attached to your DID rather than the application itself, that list follows you everywhere, and it's just up to the application to read from the Ceramic network rather than, you know, it managing that entire friends list on its own. So ComposeDB enables that. And the top layer here is this data composites idea, and that is where we take the decentralized identifiers and we allow them to control these schemas that have been composed and built together. So if we go back again and we take a look at this, where user sign up might be a schema, site preferences might be a schema, adding and following friends might be a schema, we kind of bundle them together into something called a composite, and then the app is able to read just the data schemas that it cares about. And it does so at this topmost level. And this is where our DID session library really comes into play. This flow looks a lot like a user goes to an application. There's a connect wallet button in that application. They click it. MetaMask pops up if that's their wallet of choice. And it says, hey, like, do you authorize this app to do stuff on your behalf? Typically, those permissions are interacting with this specific data composite. The user signs that message one time and they get a version of a DID in which now the app can do stuff in a session-based manner on their behalf for a predefined period of time. So the user no longer has to sign multiple messages. If they add a friend, they don't have to sign a message to make that happen. If they change a site preference, they don't have to sign a message to make that happen. They basically sign a message when they log in, and then the app is allowed to do stuff on their behalf. So it's very much a Web2 kind of cookies experience, only built around DIDs rather than cookies and wallets and stuff. So the crazy thing is every piece of data on Ceramic is globally readable, which means that we had to come up with a mechanism to protect like malicious writes and stuff. And that's where also like decentralized identifiers come into play. The way a data stream works is any application that happens to know the schema can read that data. But only the individual that did that controls the stream can write updates to that data. And this immediately gives us back that sovereignty back to the users. So, and the agency, right? So really we're after like this entire new era of open source information. We need de-siloed data. We want data that works across any app in any context, regardless of what the tech stack might be. On top of that, if the community comes together and they gain consensus on specific data models, like a basic profile or like what site preferences look like, it encourages a much broader data ecosystem, and it encourages those developers to take part in figuring out what that looks like instead of having so many one-off schemas that exist. All of this should be accessible from around the web, and we really, by running nodes and having developers and putting out all three layers of this, or all three pillars of what Ceramic is, we're really aiming to share the network effects of what's going on. Between those that are building and those that are innovating and pushing the limits of what Web3 data might look like. And honestly, the thing that got me to join this organization is the user agency. whoever has the DID is the controller of that data, and they get to use it how they see fit. If I have a basic profile and it's attached to my DID, which is maybe attached to my MetaMask wallet, I can update my name whenever I want, and nobody can tell me that I can't. And that's what's awesome about this. And then that's like reflected across all these applications. And this, like, the profile example is definitely arbitrary, but I'm thinking bigger, like friends lists, or there's a lot of things like my site preferences. If I never had to change the color of a website because it automatically switched to dark mode for me, I think that just brings a much better user experience to the world for us. On top of that, like, nobody's going to like sell my data, and that's super important to me. And if they do start to sell it, then I can just change it or make it unusable for them because I'm the one that has agency over that. So this Ceramic network has a couple pillars, these qualities that exist, and we had to keep these in mind as we built out this solution. First and foremost, it needed to be scalable, and we achieved that by having a local first design. So if I sit down to develop something using Ceramic, I'm also running a node on my local machine. This allows me to have real-time updates during the development process to the data that I'm working with. So my app gets instant feedback as I build things. On top of that, it also increases the number of nodes on the network, which help with the real-time updates for apps that actually run in production. The other advantage to this is if you've done Web3 stuff, which I'm sure most of you have, we know it can be slow because of consensus, right? When we have to agree that like a proof exists, sometimes that takes time. But by running a local first design, we can skip consensus during the development time, which means that we're not constrained to waiting on that to happen for us to see if we're building the right thing. In the bigger picture, like, there is consensus on the network, but for development, we get to abstract our ways out of that. The second thing was it had to be mutable. Like, data doesn't make any sense if you don't allow a user to change it. People change their name frequently. That's not an uncommon thing. People change their usernames frequently. That's not an uncommon thing. So it needed to be updatable, but we also wanted to maintain every single state that that data stream has ever been in. And that was very important that we had that read-only history, since that is the only way to prove that the current state of the data is exactly what it's supposed to be. And we do that with built-in anchor commits down to, currently Ethereum. In the long run, it is chain agnostic. We do aim to be chain agnostic. Our development team has an Ethereum background, so we support Ethereum first and then other EVM alternatives, and soon, hopefully, other complete layer ones as time goes on. We're also flexible, and that means that those data schemas, we're aiming to use GraphQL, and we really give users that single unified interface. As a developer, like, all you have to do is understand how to use the Ceramic library, and that is going to interoperate with IPFS. It's going to get your data anchored down on chain. You don't have to learn like 10 different APIs for 10 different apps to make things happen. It's one API to rule them all in Lord of the Rings style, hopefully, when it comes to dealing with data on Web3. And the interoperability, I've kind of hint on this a little bit. It's chain agnostic. We're aiming to support all keys, chains, and contexts that can come up with. And we do this because this whole decentralized identity piece is built in. It is a core fundamental piece to how Ceramic works. No stream of data on the Ceramic network can exist without decentralized identifiers. They're the only thing that is allowed to control a data stream on Ceramic, which also means they're the only thing that's allowed to create a data stream on Ceramic. So all of that kind of brings itself back full circle to say that Ceramic is essentially dynamic content that's created using flexible data models, stored on a decentralized peer-to-peer network, controlled by decentralized IDs. And if you can wrap your head around that piece, then I think there's a really solid understanding of what Ceramic is and what we're aiming to do with it. So I think that's the general overview. I don't want to take up too much time going into specific Web3 solving cases here, but I would love to open it up to allow for this to become more of a discussion and questions and answer whatever you guys might have. I think there's probably value there at that layer at this point, right? So that's the overview. I would love to open it up and talk to you guys.
So, all right, Keith, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks so much, Matthew. It's super interesting. Can I ask about, I was confused about the privacy model. So I think you talked about how DIDs control rights onto the Ceramic network, but then anyone can read if they understand the schema. So if I was to put, I mean, let's just talk the PII. So if I have PII in the Ceramic network, does that mean that anyone can read it, or they can only read it with my permission? Or can you just talk about the overall privacy model if it exists?
Yeah, this is actually a super easy question to answer. I thank you for asking it. I also think it's a really important one. The short answer is there's not a huge privacy model. The aim would be to make data open and composable, which means that the limitation is that you would not want to store PII on Ceramic. There's a couple ways that you could, but like, I don't think anybody at Ceramic would ever recommend doing any of them. One of those ways would be to encrypt your data client side, store it in Ceramic, and then decrypt it when you need it. The problem with that is now it's not open. So if you encrypt it in application A, application B has no way to decrypt that. So there are certain things that Ceramic is not suitable for. Things like credit card numbers, social security numbers, any form of PII, we would 1,000,000% advise to not put on Ceramic. All data on Ceramic is not encrypted by default, simply because it has that globally read-only mindset to it. We want it to be reused. We want application developers to not have to design custom schemas. As a result, we encourage people to store as much plain text stuff as we can. So it's really useful for user-generated data that isn't sensitive, or also like service-generated data. And this is an area we don't talk much about yet because it's kind of like in exploration mode. Microservices often have data needs, and they could potentially have DIDs, and they could be writing data that isn't sensitive too. So things that aren't sensitive is what work really well on data. There is a protocol out there called Lit protocol, and that would be, if you did need to encrypt anything on Ceramic, still don't recommend PII, but if for any reason you need to encrypt anything, we recommend that you go through Lit protocol to do that encryption.
Can I ask a quick follow-up? Because I'm now a little bit confused, because a lot of the use cases you talked about were things like maybe we're using different definitions of PII, because in my definition of PII, that includes things like first name, last name, gender, like a lot of the things that would be in a profile when you like sign up to a website. So maybe, am I missing something here? Like maybe you don't consider that to be PII or?
Well, I mean, that's your name's pretty public, right? I can look that up on a million forums. My address is pretty public, right? Like I bought a house that gets published publicly to the city. So I don't necessarily consider like my name PII, whereas like my social security number, my driver's license number even, which is still kind of gray because I think that's pretty public normally. Like things that could better compromise me might be, and I get that you could build like a threat profile, like by getting my name, birthday, and like my pet's name, right? You could probably social engineer somebody on that front. The second piece to your follow-up is the profile thing, is very much just a way for us to talk about composability in a realm that we're all familiar with. We had some things using profiles, and the advantage to that is it's all opt-in, right? So like nobody's going to force a profile on a Ceramic user. It's one of those things, if you want to have a profile, you can have a profile. There's also nothing that stops you from using fake data for whatever it's worth. Like if you wanted to be somebody completely brand new in Web3, like you kind of could. because it's all about your decentralized identifier and not so much the text that you've attached to it. So I think there's definitely, there might be a small difference in what we're considering PII for sure. And then on top of that, the profile thing is just something that's easy, I think, for us to reconcile in a presentation for what could be composable. Does that answer the question? I'm happy to go deeper too, if need be.
Yeah, I guess my high level comment would be, I think when we, a lot of us look at, have struggled with PII on blockchains. I think that's where a lot of us come from. It's not so much about what you think to be PII. It's more about the privacy regulations like GDPR, what they consider to be PII, and then their rules and regulations around that. So, I mean, that's always kind of my framework for analysis, but thank you for your answer.
Yeah, that's actually a super good point. I'm taking a note of it right now, to be honest with you. I like to go have like debrief sessions with our engineers and our team after I do these engagements. So I took a note of that. And because I think you do have a good point, right? Like what we consider to be PII or not might not follow a regulatory standard. And that's something that we should look at. So I definitely appreciate you bringing that up.
We have a Nick, do you have questions?
Please be honest. Thanks. And thanks for the presentation. That was really interesting. What are you seeing adoption like, or in terms of the actual apps that are kind of moving beyond demo stage and kind of moving into production level apps? What does that look like in terms of the volume of apps that are being built on Ceramic just now?
Yeah, that's also a great question. Thanks for asking that. A couple of our flagship apps that we have on our mainnet right now are Gitcoin. So Gitcoin just rolled out Gitcoin Passport. All of that is built on top of Ceramic. Metagame is built on top of Ceramic. DAO House is built on top of Ceramic. DNS XYZ is built on top of Ceramic. I think Rabbit Hole is, and there's a handful of other. Orbis. Orbis is a major player. Orbis.club, they're a major player on Ceramic. They even rolled out an SDK that further integrates Ceramic for social use cases. So those are like the main like pioneer Web3 apps that exist. As far as like some of the data, we're seeing hundreds of thousands of GIDs being generated. I don't know how accurate that number is. It's not hard to go in and create a DID. I've probably created a good 50 of them myself just doing testing and application development. So I don't know how accurate that number is or like what it truly represents. We are far enough along to where like we're a real product, but we're not far enough along to where our metrics have super meaningful analysis behind them. We're just now getting to that meaningful analysis behind the metrics that we do capture. So we have a lot of DIDs, which would imply that we have a lot of streams, which there are quite a bit of streams. There's actually a site, it's called Cerscan. It's C-E-R-S-C-A-N, cerscan.com, I think. They're an explorer for Ceramic streams. So that's another one. They're kind of a Web2 app though. I don't think they're deployed in a Web3 way, but they allow you to explore some of like the data that exists on Ceramic, and that's kind of exciting if you're into data as a whole. Those are our big major players. We also have some interesting use cases coming down the pipeline. So a lot of those are social. A lot of the ones I mentioned are more social or verified credentials. Those kind of exist there. We have a couple projects in our pipeline right now, though, that are branching out to do things like carbon footprints for buildings and putting that on chain, or like brand reviews. We're working with a project right now. Their goal is to say, solve the fake review thing that like Amazon deals with. So if I want to leave a review on my brand new shoes, then I have to have some sort of identifier that I own those shoes, most likely an NFT. And if I have that, then I can write a review, and they're storing all of their reviews and the validity of those reviews on Ceramic. At least that's their goal long term. They're still really early on. So we're starting to see more use cases that aren't social related or aren't verified credential related, but currently a lot of it is social and verified credential, which kind of throws back to the whole like basic profile idea. That's something that our current builders can reconcile with a lot. So we'll probably get better examples of composability as we get different use cases built out on Ceramic. But there's a good handful of applications on our mainnet, and that does not account for all the applications that come out of hackathons at like ETH Global and stuff that are running on testnet. And I don't have the testnet numbers.
Thank you.
Hey, Matthew, I have a question in regards to like speed and performance, because when I last checked IPFS, which Ceramic is built on top of, it's a little bit slow. So
yeah.
When the use case that you're talking about signing in, usually people has service level expectations in regards to like, hey, almost immediate, right? So
yeah.
What's the kind of the performance here? And then how do you kind of, if you have solved the performance issues, how do you solve it?
Wonderful question. I love it. There's a lot to unpack here. So I'm going to talk about two different things because they're both performance related. The first is the sign-in piece, because I agree. There's like a service level expectation that if I click the sign-in button, I need to be signed in right now. I don't have time to wait. Web2 has done a good job at getting us signed in quickly for the most part. Currently, with our new session library that we shipped that wraps around DIDs, signing in is really painless. It's really fast, because it is not coupled with IPFS. So all the DID stuff doesn't actually write down into IPFS. So I could go create a bunch of decentralized identifiers right now, and they're not anchored into IPFS. So we abstract the fact that IPFS is a little bit slow away from that. What ends up happening is like when that DID decides to generate data, there's a field in the data object that says controller, and we put the DID in there for reference, and that's who can control the data. So now we do some logic that says, hey, there's an update that wants to go into the stream. Is it from the DID? Yes, it's from the DID. Okay, we'll make that update. So all the sign-in piece is really fast. It's actually, we implemented and helped pioneer the sign-in with Ethereum standard. So if you're used to sign-in with Ethereum or have any experience with it, it's as fast as that. You click the Connect Wallet button, you select MetaMask, MetaMask pops up, says sign this message, you click sign, and you have a DID and you're ready to go in a matter of however fast you can click those buttons. So the sign-in piece is pretty immediate. It's really actually a wonderful user experience. For Web3, I remember when I was first getting into Web3, the whole, how do I connect to this app was kind of a painful process. This is actually, I hate using the word elegant when it comes to code, because it's really hard to have elegant solutions for code, but this one really feels elegant. It's also extensible. As I said, right now, it's really built on top of the sign-in with Ethereum standard. We are currently, in talks with Solana and pioneering what the sign-in with Solana standard is going to look like. So hopefully we can implement that chain agnostic, you know, DIDs here pretty soon, and sign-in methods at least for your apps. So from that point of view, we're talking pretty immediate. Going down into the IPFS layer, which is where the data is, right? So Ceramic sits right on top of IPFS, and it's an interface down to IPFS. We solve this problem because of the local nature of a node. I don't have a diagram, but so I'll try to talk this through. So you have an IPFS node. We'll call that the bottom layer. So layer one or layer zero, depending on how you want to count, will be an IPFS node. And you're right. Like, that's connected to an IPFS swarm, and it's slow to propagate, and that is the nature of IPFS. On top of that is Ceramic. And when we make a call to data, Ceramic holds the most recent change. So the best way I can explain this is to think of the command line tool Git, or just any version control for code. When we do a Git init and we get that first commit in there, so we Git commit, initial commit or whatever, right? We have that first Genesis commit. And every commit we make, we're kind of like tracking like what's different, like what's changed between commits. Ceramic streams are the same. There's a Genesis commit, and that lives on the Ceramic node initially. And then if a user makes an update, they're basically making Git commits to some degree to a ceramic stream. They're not Git commits, but they're similar. We're committing the changes to a ceramic stream. What's happening is the ceramic node is always in the know of the most current state, so the tip. It knows the latest commit. The previous commits are what get sent down to IPFS. So all the historical commits end up on IPFS. So if an application that is tightly coupled with a ceramic node needs data, it is asking the ceramic node for the tip, and it's getting it back instantly. It's as long as a standard HTTP request takes, so we're talking milliseconds. It's getting that information back instantly. If an application that is not tightly coupled with a node requests data, then the node that has the tip will send the tip over, or a copy of the tip over to the new node, and the node for application two will query IPFS and will rebuild the data from Genesis commit all the way to tip and check all the blockchain proof along the way. So the very first time a brand new application requests information that it doesn't know about, it can be a little slow on query. But from there on out, that node will also keep track of the tip. So there's like libp2p pub/sub messaging that takes place between the nodes to keep the tips in sync. So it will know about the tip, and all subsequent reads will be much faster. So the performance depends on the situation. How we solve the slow IPFS part is by having those nodes keep track of the most current state, and we only lean on IPFS when we need proof to verify that the current state is accurate. There's a big consensus mechanism that runs too, in case like we need to, like there's two writes that happen at once and there's two reads that happen at once. The nodes will communicate with one another to look at like how everything got anchored down to chain through IPFS, and then they'll decide who wins. That's a very well documented thing though in the docs, and I'm going to mess it up if I try to tell it to you completely, but that's just know that there is a consensus mechanism to solve for that. But that's how we get around like those performance implications of IPFS.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. And Keith, I think you have a question earlier in the chat, right?
I think I answered my own question. So I'd ask where the DID docs are stored. But I think if you're using DID PKH, then I guess they're just instantly composed. Sorry, you correct me if I'm wrong, but my reading of the documentation is that you're using DID PKH, so you're not storing DID docs, you're just composing them on the fly when you have those kind of signed-in applications. Would that be correct?
Yeah, they get composed on the fly. So when I connect my wallet, I get a standard a DID. I forget the method that's used on the wallet right away. Then that gets turned into DID PKH. The DID PKH is passed over to the app. Obviously, that's the public key hash for it. That's what manages the session. But the DID itself, like we know of DIDs because like we can tell how many DIDs are created. I'm not sure exactly how that communication with the data takes place. That's a good question. I would love to follow up with a much better answer for you. However, I know is that I can create many DIDs via command line tools and other stuff that aren't PKH DIDs and still use our libraries. So those aren't stored either. Like if I were to sit down right now at my terminal and create a DID using DID key, that's not like stored on Ceramic anywhere. What it is if I publish it to the node, but like I don't know if the DID session, which is what is responsible for DID PKH, I don't know if that inherently publishes it to the node. That'll be something I can follow up on with you though to get you a better answer.
And Matthew, a different question. So earlier, if I remember correctly, you mentioned that there are some folks actually using Ceramic to kind of store verifiable credentials using Ceramic. So if that's correct, like, can you kind of share with us what are some of the use cases? Because you also mentioned that it is advised not to put really sensitive personal information on ceramic networks. So what kind of verifiable credential use cases are people using right now on top of ceramic?
Yeah, great question. There's a couple of different use cases. I think Gitcoin turns these into VCs. So Gitcoin Passport is the number one thing I could point you to for this. So what they do is they allow you to build like a more robust like profile around who you are. So if I create my Gitcoin Passport, I can get stamps, which I'm pretty sure they're storing as VCs. And those stamps are like, hey, I'm gonna verify my Twitter account into this passport, or I'm gonna verify my Facebook account. So they're building kind of a link between Web2 applications so that they can be reflected better on Web3 apps. They're right now like the biggest player in any type of like VC kind of space for what's ending up on Ceramic. I am 99% positive all of those stamps are VCs. I did not work super close with Gitcoin when they did the integration though, so you should probably do due diligence to find out if they are VCs, but I'm pretty positive those are. Then we actually just had a chat with an organization that's doing something super unique over at DevCon last week. They are building a know your developer platform. So one of the things they're doing is looking at historical like GitHub behavior from a developer and building like a know your developer kind of credential that they will eventually want to store on Ceramic, but they're not as polished as Gitcoin is yet. They don't have that out on, even on testnet. That's something that they're aiming to do. So we're seeing things that, and so that one, the whole GitHub one is all public data, right? Like GitHub has the APIs for querying everything you've ever done as a developer that you've done in public. And so they're using public data that's already available. So it's not anything the user didn't opt in to being public as is. And then they are actually scrubbing a lot of the PII out of it. So, they don't care about your name. They don't care about your email. They're scrubbing that out because the GitHub API returns that anyway. Every time you run a query on like a specific user or a repo. Same with Gitcoin. I don't know that they're scrubbing it necessarily. However, it's a 100% opt-in situation. Like I don't have to connect my Facebook to my Gitcoin Passport if I don't want to. And I think that's largely the mindset of how it's being handled right now. Of it's a 100% opt-in situation at the moment.
Thank you. Any other questions for Matthew from the community? All right, Matthew, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
So how do you think like Ceramic can help increase the market adoptions of self-sovereign identity? Because, you know, as we know, self-sovereign identity, even though we're in the community and it seems like it's getting more and more popular, but it's still a long ways to go in terms of getting mainstream adoption. So how do you see like Ceramic or, from your experiences, the intersection between Web3 and then the self-sovereign identity communities, how do we actually work together to increase the market adoptions of SSI?
That's another wonderful question. From Ceramic's point of view, we are pioneering the use of DID-PKH, and we really think that ties into self-sovereign identities very tightly. From here on out, every DID that is created on Ceramic that we encourage the creation of is pointed to using this DID-PKH method. And what that actually does is it takes all blockchain wallets and it kind of turns them into DID wallets, right? Any wallet can now become a DID, and that gives you all the sovereignty over your identity there. So we are, by driving adoption of using DID-PKH through various hackathons and just publishing a really well thought out and well built package that's easier for developers to use. I think we definitely push things forward when it comes to using that as an identity mechanism. On top of that, our CTO, not to humble brag too much, but like he's very active in the DID standard itself for W3C. So if you go look up the DID standard, Joel Thorntonson is our CTO. Like he's an active author for what decentralized identifiers look like. So from just like the point of view of values to some degree as like company values, I don't think there's a bigger commitment to anything, in Web3 outside of what we have for identity. The identity piece is critical for us having sovereign data. The identity piece is critical for user adoption, especially as we've seen Web2 kind of violate privacy along the way. So for us, like I think it's a very obvious flag planted in the ground that identity is key and it's important. And we're going to continue pioneering what that means to make it easy to onboard users into. As I said about like DID PKH, it couldn't be easier to sign in to a Web3 application right now. Like sign in with Ethereum was great. And then we're automatically, you know, rolling DIDs when you use that standard and you have that and it follows you everywhere because it's attached to your wallet. We're also working right now on figuring out how to do like multi-DID. So if I had multiple wallets, but I still kind of wanted them to be coupled with a bigger ID, like how does that work? And that's something that's in like the scoping phase for us. So I wouldn't expect it anytime soon, but it is on our plate. So we're going to continue pioneering ways to reduce the friction of the Web2 user getting a DID while making it very obvious that the Web3 user is using DIDs rather than a direct wallet address. And we're going to continue doing that in the ways that we've gotten this far, which is hackathons and good packages and just encouraging the community to build with these standards. We're also going to continue contributing back to those standards that do exist around decentralized identity. That's not a one and done for us. We're fully committed to having sovereign identities on Web3.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. C, you have the floor.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Matthew. How are we doing?
Hi.
Have you also considered like using ZK so you don't actually reveal like full PII? So say for like government documents and passports and things like that.
Yeah, that's a super solid question. I actually just got out of a huge ZKP like presentation at DevCon last week. There is definitely a use case for this. Ceramic itself is probably not going to pioneer what that looks like though. There's nothing that would prevent you from integrating, zero knowledge proofs into the way your application works and then storing whatever you need to on Ceramic. But I think we're at this stage, we're largely leaving that in the hands of the community to solve. We're really focused on just making sure we put out a good product. For example, like indexing data was something we didn't have a month ago and now we do have it. So our focus is largely on queryability and interactions with the data. But for like that type of stuff, we are absolutely encouraging, running zero knowledge, protocols along with Ceramic to figure that out. We're super, super stoked to see what the community does on that, but we're not at a point where we can put our own engineering cycles into the integration of ZK at the current moment. I would 100% recommend it as an exploration realm for how to store PII on Ceramic. I'd still be very careful and probably advise against it in today's state. But I would love to see and have even a further discussion about how zero knowledge can kind of tie into Ceramic streams. It's something we're in support of. We encourage it. We would love to see the community build that though, because we just don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
All right. I just want to thank you again, Matthew, for taking the time to present Ceramic to the community. Appreciate the time and appreciate Ceramic like committing so much into open standards.
Thanks for having me. I love talking about this stuff, and it's always great to be in a group that asks very thoughtful questions and is very clearly thoughtful about what Web3 means to the world. So I just genuinely thank you for having us here today.
Great, great. And then last announcements or reminders from the community. Introductions and reintroductions. All right. Thank you. We're right on time. Thanks. Thanks a lot. And thank you, Matthew, again. Thanks.
Thanks, Matthew.